This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today. It is episode 39. It's like looking around for my little sign because I have on the top of my little sign, it says, say episode 39. So I have to make sure that I say that, because if I don't, I will go episode after episode without saying it. I have water bottles that are flying around in the car. Anyways, been a good week this week. We are ramping up for the Christmas break, and the client that I work for closes for a week at Christmas. This Christmas is a little interesting because of where it falls. The Christmas week break for them is actually split between 2 weeks, which means that we're going to be working 2 days next week and then 2 days the following week. So I'll actually be uploading driving home on Tuesday of next week, and then we'll be back to our regular Thursday. Anyways, this week. Big news this week. Got to hear the new grandbaby's heartbeat this week, so that's fun. All those little exciting things that come along with being a grandparent for the first time. Also, last Thursday, after I had recorded the podcast, I actually had a call with a friend of a friend out in California. He was looking for some advice on publishing a book and distributing the book, those types of things. We just had a really, really nice conversation. He has his PhD. He's an executive coach, so he's had a lot of experience in helping people get the most out of life. And what's really fascinating to me is that it doesn't matter what your educational experience is. It doesn't matter what your financial state is. The principles work. And as we talked about the principles, we had a deep connection in the spirit as we were talking. And so it was a good conversation. I really enjoyed it, and we may do it again. So we'll see how that all develops. This week, I had planned all along this week to talk about the war in Afghanistan, since we as a nation have committed to more troops in Afghanistan. And if your first thought is, whoa, wait a minute, oh, I didn't commit to more troops. Well, the fact of the matter is, we as a nation expressed our will, and we elected a president, and he stands in proxy for us. And so we as a nation are now committing more troops. For whatever you think about that, right decision, wrong decision, whatever, it is the way it is. In light of that, I had planned to talk about an individual that I had heard about several months ago, whom I felt had a wonderful approach to the current conflicts in Pakistan and in Afghanistan. And I actually ordered his books a couple of weeks ago, thinking I'll get his books in, I'll read through his books. They will have a lot of good things to say. It'll be great. Apparently, I forgot to push the checkout button on Amazon.com. So I've been waiting for the books to come in. They have never come in. And a couple of days ago, I thought, where are those books? And so I went and checked, and they were still in my cart. So, in lieu of having the books, I went ahead and hopped on the web last night and did some research and actually found out some things I didn't know and I don't think would have been included in the books. So I think this is going to actually work out just fine. The thing that I didn't know is that this man was actually nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize in 2009. And I consider it to be very fitting and quite fascinating to realize the differences in approaches between what this man is doing and what the Nobel Peace Prize winner is doing. So, let's tell the story of Greg Mortensen. Greg Mortensen grew up overseas. I believe his parents worked overseas. It's in my notes somewhere, with some sort of relief agencies or something. They have been involved in overseas work efforts. So he's a third culture person. Third culture person, sorry, that's code word that missionary kids use. If you grow up in a country that is your own country, you are a first culture kid, because you are in the country that you identify as your primary culture. If you move to another country, you are no longer in your first culture. You're actually in a second culture, but you're not really a second culture kid, because you never really mesh with that culture. You always have some of your first culture and you always have some of your second culture. And so you end up being a third culture kid, because your family creates this tertiary culture, to use a big word, creates this third culture that is a mix of the first and second cultures. And so this man had a background as a third culture kid. And that does help to explain some of the things that he decided to do, because he wouldn't be more prone to do these things being a third culture kid. In the early 90s, Greg Mortensen decided that he would attempt with several other people to scale K2, which is the second highest mountain in the world. As I understand it, it's in Pakistan. It's a very difficult climb. He set out with several others. If I have the story right, they were approaching the summit. He was within 1,000 feet, I think, of the summit, and there were some climbers who were in trouble, and he decided that he would help them get down as opposed to push on to the summit. In the process of all that, I think they were actually on K2 for 78 days. He was in some distress himself by the time he actually got off the mountain. And he ended up in a northern Pakistani village, was greeted by the village elder, who then brought him in. They nursed him back to health. And during this process of being nursed back to health, he wandered around the back of a building and saw a whole group of kids. I believe there were 84 kids, 79 boys and 5 girls, I think, that were trying to learn, except they didn't have a building and they didn't have a teacher, because the village could not afford the $1 a day salary that it would cost to bring in a teacher. And so these kids were sitting back there scratching in the sand trying to figure out something. I don't know if maybe the teacher had given them some assignments and left, but whatever. The situation was not optimal. In the course of all this, Greg Mortensen promises that he will do his best to come back and build them a school. I saw one interview where, if I recall correctly, he said he didn't really know what possessed him to say that. And of course, I would chime in that that was a whisper, because it put him on his current epic. He came back to the States. He talked to some people. They said, well, let's just get a list of celebrities. You write them. You tell them what you want. They give you money. Ta-da! Done. Okay, so he contacts 580 different celebrities. Puts the money out there. Nothing. Zip. I think he ended up getting one check from for $100 from somebody. I don't know who he got the check from. But that was about it. At this point, he's living in his car. He's trying to save up as much as he can. He's just not getting there, though. I think one of his relatives at this point teaches school up in the north central states, and she says, why don't you come and you talk to my class about it? And he's figuring, well, fine. So he goes and he talks to the class about it. And this class, all these kids kind of get enthused. And so they bring in their change, you know, and they raise like, whatever, $100 and some odd. Woohoo! You know? He's not thinking much of this. But then the word starts to spread about what he wants to do, how he wants to go back to Pakistan. And he wants to build a school for these kids. And the word starts to spread. And more kids start sending him money. And he starts to get some attention. And then he starts to get to the place where he's starting to get, you know, some real money in. Eventually, he raises the money. He goes over. He goes through his adventure of building the first school, which is an adventure, because although he is somewhat culturally sensitive, if I recall an earlier interview that I had seen of him, he actually goes in there the American way the first time. The American way is you go in there, you get the job done, you get out, you know, you tell them how they're going to do it. And he is just getting nowhere. He's just spinning his wheels. Things are not getting done. And finally, he gets pulled off to the side by a guy who has some compassion on him. And he says, look, he said, we'll get this school built, but you have to let us do it our way. And so he starts backing off. And he starts letting the Pakistanis build the school, proceed like they want to. He really only has one requirement that he puts on. And that is, if we build this school, you have to educate both girls and boys. That's like one of his strict requirements. You have to educate the girls too. Gets the school built. It's a success. He starts going around and over the course of however long it's been, 18 years, I think the first school went up in 1993, maybe it's been 16, 17 years. He has built 78 schools in Pakistan and Afghanistan. His website is located at Pennies for Peace, because that was after he started getting all these pennies from these school children. The website is at Pennies for Peace. He's written two books now. The first book was on the New York Times bestseller list for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. It's called Three Cups of Tea, which is an analogy that a chief gave him and told him early on about how this relationship was going to work. That when you come in and you have the first cup of tea, you're a stranger and you're being welcomed. When you have the second cup of tea, you become a friend. And when you have the third cup of tea, you're family, and they will do anything for you, including die for you. And his whole approach has been to build relationships. He goes in to villages, and when he finds a village that wants to have a school, he goes in and first goes to the village elders and talks to them. And basically says, we'll bring in the supplies, you're going to supply the labor, you're going to do this and this and this, we'll come in, we'll help you, have to educate the girls alongside the boys. Yada, yada, yada. Now, they do have some girls' schools and some boys' schools, but if it's a situation where there is a mixture, they have to educate the girls, too. He has been very, very successful in this. And the news program that I saw many months ago, they were actually talking to the military, the American military, who were in areas where he had built schools, and they said every area where he goes in and builds schools, the level of violence goes down. You know, this is one guy with a vision going in and doing a good work. The other thing that you hear about in the news is you hear about the Taliban or Al-Qaeda or any of these radical Islam groups coming in and destroying schools. And I think the figure is something like there's been 500 schools across Pakistan and Afghanistan that have been destroyed. Maybe it was in Afghanistan. I can't remember for sure. That have been destroyed. 500 of these schools. Except they aren't his schools. See? Because when he builds a school, the community gets the school built because they really want the school built. And they have sweat equity in the school. And so they're there to defend that school because it's not the Americans' school, it's their school. He tells one story about, I think it was some Taliban in Pakistan, came and they told the people that had this one school, we're going to come back, we're going to destroy this school. If anybody's going to school here, we're going to kill them, blah, blah, blah. You know, trying to just put fear in them. The headmaster gets on his bicycle. He rides his bicycle over miles and miles and miles to another little chiefdom over there. He tells the chiefdom what's going on. That guy brings his people with him. They capture the Taliban guys. They beat them up, kill some of them, extract the information in their own way from them as to who's what where. They go take care of those guys. I mean, these guys are defending this school because it's their school. And thankfully, the military, the American military, really have paid attention to what Greg is doing in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And they have engaged him in many conversations, and many of his books have been bought by military personnel and high-ranking military personnel. So he's even having an influence there. But I read a quote from him that I think is very telling. And I think we can derive some principles from. When he was writing his first book, which is called Three Cups of Tea, the subtitle of that is Promoting Peace One School at a Time, I think. When he originally wrote the book, his publisher wanted a different subtitle. If I recall, his publisher wanted a subtitle to the effect, Fighting the War on Terrorism One School at a Time. And he said no. And his rationale was, if you are fighting a war on terrorism, you are being driven by fear. But if you are promoting peace, you are being driven by hope. Now then, for me, this is a pretty clear delineation, because in one case you're being driven by the flesh, and in the other case you're being driven by spirit. And as I've said over and over and over and over again, flesh breeds flesh, spirit breeds spirit. So if you're going over to fight against something and to destroy something and to conquer something, chances are you are going to generate emotions and generate passions that will give you a significant level of pushback. If, on the other hand, you are going over because you have a love for the Pakistani people, you have a love for the Afghans, that you have a desire to see their children educated and be able to have a better life, that you have a desire to influence the surroundings of those children and create an environment of success for them, and you're operating in the spirit, what you can expect to see is you can expect to see an environment of peace being generated around you and an environment of spirit and success being generated around you. And it's just a natural consequence of the basic approach that you're taking. I have a quote from Greg Mortensen to this effect. I'm on my driveway now so I can read. To this effect, where he said, "We seem to live in fear, and somehow we just don't quite get it that if we could reach out a little bit, if we could just have a bit of cultural sensitivity and have a few cups of tea and build relationships, we could really make a difference in the world. And I think people would start wanting to interact with us a little bit more." And I think he's absolutely right. What's amazing about all of this to me is that here is one guy, and he has a vision of what can be done. And he starts with one school, and he just keeps building. I'm getting my mail. And you know, he doesn't have 100,000 troops in the field, and he doesn't have billions of dollars behind him. And not to denigrate in any way what the military is trying to accomplish in Afghanistan or Pakistan, but when I look at Greg Mortensen, I see a far greater opportunity for success in what he's doing than, frankly, I do in sending a whole bunch more troops over to Afghanistan. I'm backing into my garage. Which, by the way, I don't know if you've listened to the podcast for the last couple of weeks, I got my garage door so that it opens and closes now without me having to get out. Woohoo! There is one other thing that I thought was really fascinating that I think is something that is good to ponder about his experience there. And I've got the story here, and I wrote it down because I went, wow. He was asked, "Have you ever had threats against you? Have you, you know, have people tried to kill you? What? You know, have you had difficulties, adversity come because of all the things that you're doing?" And he said, right after 9/11, he said, it started to get, you know, pretty difficult. And I've got half of the quote. I'm looking. Here it is. Okay, here we go. Okay, so after 9/11, he said, they asked him, "Did you ever want to give up? Did you ever think about giving up?" And he said, "The only one time I really wanted to, where I felt like quitting, was after 9/11. When I was in Pakistan, everywhere I went, people sought me out. Listen to this. They asked for forgiveness for something they had nothing to do with. I remember a very poor elderly widow who brought me 5 eggs and put them in my palms and said, 'Please take these to the widows in New York.' When I came back to the States, it was Halloween Day 2001. I went to my office and I started getting hate mail, and I got death threats. These weren't from people in Afghanistan or Pakistan. They were Americans. Some called me a traitor. Some said, 'You know, I should die a painful death because I'm worse than the enemy. I'm one of us who's helping, you know, girls of Muslims go to school.'" And I thought, wow. Wow. You know, I think it would be a good thing if we honestly took a look at what's driving our motives in Pakistan and Afghanistan and Iraq. because it's really easy sometimes to go for the quick answer. Someone attacks you, go bomb them, go invade them, conquer them, make sure they can't do that again. But the quick answer isn't necessarily the best answer. And the quick answer, a lot of times, doesn't get you where you really want to be. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.